Welcome back. We are live in my free community that goes along with this podcast. Hashtag Hot Mess Success, all one word, community. You can find us on Facebook. Today we are, obviously, I am recording episode 35. I promise I will get it together today. But this podcast is called Hot Mess Success for a reason. We just fumble our way through it. Today we are going to talk about trauma and our bodies. How often trauma hides in our bodies, how it can just randomly come out of nowhere. And I'm going to take you through a personal journey of my recent trip to the dentist, some NET therapy that I did last year, and some cool Chinese medicine fun facts about your sleep-wake cycle that also have to do with your body and emotions or trauma that it may be holding on to. So get ready. It's going to be a really cool episode. And I say cool episode. let's just get right into this, shall we? So yesterday I had my first dentist appointment since the world shut down. My father-in-law was my dentist and he retired in 2020 because he was already partially retired, and there were so many hoops and things that dentists had to jump through after all that. So I didn't have a dentist, and I am neurospicy, so I am not great at finding new things, new PCPs, new dentists, any of that. I hate making appointments. It is just a task that my brain hates. However, I have two fake teeth. I have two caps in the front of my mouth. And if you are new here, then this is going to be new. But if you're a loyal listener, then you know a lot of this story because I have shared a lot of this story before. But knocked my own front teeth out, and so I had caps put on in 2002, and we will get into that, but I had them replaced in 2010. And so I can tell that the caps that I have are nearing their end of life. When we work out and my heart rate is like 150 or higher, I can feel my pulse in my teeth, and I know that's not good. Here's another example of why it is so important to know your body. And, you know, we just talked about time targets, and this is one of those perfect examples that even though I have ADHD and no part of me wanted to go back to the dentist after not being there for 5 years because I was terrified that they were going to yell at me, that they were going to lecture me, all of these things, that wasn't enough to stop me from doing something that is important but not urgent. And so if you want to go back to that episode and listen to that, you know, now or after this, I really encourage you to, because this is how we change from living in a life of stress to a life of fulfillment. Was yesterday stressful for me? Absolutely. And we're going to get into that. But what I want to emphasize is that I made the appointment before it was important and urgent. And that would be when my caps fall out, when, you know, danger happens, when the shoe drops, right? Then you do something about it. Then it is urgent and important. And now you are operating from a place of stress and sometimes trauma. And so to avoid that, we must do the things when they are just important. Is it important for me to get into the dentist and figure out my next steps and see what is going on and take care of this situation? Absolutely. But it is not urgent right now. It is not urgent yet. And so this is just a perfect example of how we make those adjustments, how we do those things differently, how we live our life differently and make different actions, even if they're hard. And I understand they're hard because I really hate making appointments. I made 3 physical health appointments on, I think, Monday. And I was like, whoo, that's it. That's a whole day, right? I don't have to do anything else because it felt so productive for my brain. And if you're neurospicy and you hate making appointments, you're probably celebrating this with me like, yes, that's amazing. And then the next day when the appointment came, I didn't want to go. I had made the appointment. It was there. All I had to do was show up, and I didn't want to go. I was scared because, one, I knew that I was going for a reason. I was going for a reason that's important, and I don't want it to become an urgent and important matter. I don't want to be in a place where I feel like I'm stuck, where I'm operating from a place of stress and trauma. So let me just move on. I just wanted to share that because obviously I'm here to teach and empower you to change your life. And that starts with taking action differently, with doing things differently. So I went in to the dentist and asked for some help, some next steps on my caps. And even as I was driving to the dentist, I couldn't fight back the tears. One, I could tell that I was a little nervous to see a new dentist because I have some trauma from my childhood about the dentist. And this is, you know, strictly an example. I am never trying to blame anyone for their actions. And here's something that I actually said to myself yesterday while I was thinking about this stuff and trying to get myself to a good place to actually go into that appointment. And I said to myself, you know, talking about my mom, because I'm going to share some stories from my childhood. It didn't start with her. She just didn't stop it. And I think that's really important because I think for a lot of our parents, you know, they were raised this way. And so they didn't know anything else. They just did what they knew. They did what they were shown. And so I think it's important for those of us that are working through some childhood trauma, that are dealing with things in our life that we wish were handled differently for us, is to remember that they didn't get that either. And it doesn't make it better. It doesn't, you know, make any part of it go away. But when we add blame to our trauma, it just adds a layer of trauma. It just adds more trauma to it. And so the more that we can shave off, the easier it is to hold and to carry and to deal with. You know, I don't blame anyone for things, especially the way, you know, that they went down. Everything happens for a reason. But I also know that they were all doing the best that they could. And so I just want to offer you that reminder that, you know, even though they didn't stop it, they didn't start it either. Like, we didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. It's very much like that. Like, they didn't start the fire. They just didn't put it out. And so now it gets to you, and now you have the opportunity to put it out. And I applaud you for listening to podcasts like this and doing the work that we do to put the fire out, because, well, it's burned enough. I think that is just it. So when we were young, we did not have a lot of money. We didn't have dental insurance. So going to the dentist was a privilege. And, you know, when we wanted things, when we wanted money for things, we had to do chores to earn it. So the dentist was kind of no different. We had to clean the house in order to go to the dentist. And again, I don't share this to blame. I don't share this to parent shame. I share this because it is part of the trauma that I carry. It is part of my past and part of my story and something that, you know, I must deal with and face head on and realize that it did something to me, right? So we had to clean the house in order to go to the dentist when I was little. And I mean, both of my sisters have trauma around dentists as well. My older sister, when she got her wisdom teeth out, she just did it with local anesthetic because we couldn't afford the $500 for anesthesia. And so she definitely has a lot going on about that. So I know there's a lot of people that have trauma regarding their teeth, and a lot of people have a fear of going to the dentist. Oddly enough, I don't actually hate the dentist. I just have a lot of trauma regarding my teeth or the dentist. So anyways, And then we wouldn't go for years, and then we would get, you know, lectured for not being there, for not taking better care of our teeth. And so it just, it was never a good experience for me. And then I married my husband. And my father-in-law is a dentist, and he's one of the most wonderful humans you will ever meet. Very much like Ned Flanders, like he even has the like matching mustache. He's just amazing. And, you know, going to him felt effortless. And I never felt bad in that chair. And yesterday I was able to tell my in-laws how much of my trauma around the dentist they have healed without even knowing it, just by being their amazing selves. And so I'm very grateful for that. But when I was 19, after my best friend committed suicide and I went back to college, I went out with my friends one night, tried to feel better, drank way too much, cried way too much. And as my friends were carrying me out of the bar, I took off and went face first into a bumper of a car. I knocked out my two front teeth. And then I was taken to Greene County Emergency Room, and they gave me two Vicodin, even though I was so wasted, I couldn't even sign my name. Went back to my dorm room and had a major meltdown. I don't even know how to describe it. All the pain and all the grief and everything that I was feeling from his suicide came out in full force, and I couldn't stop it. I flicked off the dean of my college like 19 times in my dorm room. It was possibly one of the worst nights of my life. I left my dorm in a straitjacket and then spent the better part of finals week in a psych ward without my front teeth. And you're not allowed to even put your makeup on without someone watching you. You can't shave your legs without someone coming into the shower with you. So I didn't want to do those things because I didn't want anyone else to see my mouth, and everyone wanted me to talk, and I was just hating myself so much. So much. Why couldn't I just deal? Why couldn't I just be regular sad? Like everyone else, right? There was so much there, and I can still see my 19-year-old self with those chipped teeth, and there was a black mark on the tooth that had more of it left. And it was the rubber from the bumper of a car. I obviously hit them that hard, I broke them, but part of the car was left on me. And I had to spend a week without my teeth before I could even see a dentist. And at 19, with everything else that I was dealing with, I just couldn't. It was like the last straw. And it was another reason for me to hate myself. And I took it. Those caps fell out in 2010. Here we are at an important and urgent situation. And I remember it was Christmas Eve. And I don't actually celebrate any religious holidays, but the rest of the world does. And I freaked out and I called my father-in-law on Christmas Eve. And him and my mother-in-law met me in his office. And he gave me a temporary tooth to put in to fill. And even that spared me so much trauma, because I wouldn't even let Mark see me. I wouldn't even let my husband see me without that tooth. I couldn't bring myself to do it. I didn't ever want him to see me the way I saw me back then. And I know he wouldn't, but I just couldn't. It was like that part or piece of me that I didn't want anyone to know about. I didn't want anyone to see. And in 2010, I was not a healed version of myself. I was still an alcoholic. I hadn't done any of this growth or any of this work yet. So I'm still very much in the place of, I hate me. Why wouldn't he hate me? So I'm at the dentist yesterday. And he does all his x-rays and everything. And I had two root canals with the caps. And one of them does not look good. And I'm not surprised, obviously. I don't think it's a good thing that when you work out, you feel your pulse in your teeth. Also, I can kind of feel up underneath like the edge of one of them in the back with my tongue. Hi, body awareness and sensory things, ADHD, thank you. And so I went to get it checked out before it is urgent, and I was right. So the one on the outside, I don't know if teeth, scientific names. It looks like the root canal is decaying, I don't know. And the bone is definitely decaying away from it. And when I got the caps replaced in 2010, my father-in-law told me that there wasn't enough on this tooth to cap it again. So I would need to look at a more permanent solution. And I think implants were mentioned. And so my brain hung on to those, right? So I went into the dentist's office saying, okay, I think my caps are starting to go. I need to have a solution. And this is so funny to me because I did just two episodes on this. The dentist comes in and he asked me, I'm like ready to tell him my whole life story, ready? And because ADHD overshare, hi, me, I'm Melissa, have you met me? And he asked if we're doing anything fun the rest of the day. And I was like, fun? I'm in a trauma state. I don't know. And I was like, I'm just taking my daughter to neurotherapy later. And then he kind of looked like, did that, like, I haven't heard of that. Like, what's that? I was like, it's like physical therapy for your brain. It's really cool. And so then I got into like explaining that and how after 39 years of not being able to regulate and control my emotions, like my brain can finally do that now. And no more than like 10, 15 minutes later, I'm crying in the dentist chair about trauma in my teeth. As he hands me a tissue, I'm like, yep, right after I told you I can control my emotions. Like, this is my life. But then I did say, but I know why I'm crying. I know where this is coming from. So I told him it is very important for me to have a plan moving forward. And for this not to become an emergent situation, because I knocked those two front teeth out right after my best friend committed suicide and I spent a week in a psych ward, and it's not really a time of my life that I want to visually relive. I don't think anybody wants to go without their front teeth, but with all the trauma, it's like extra hard and extra deep, right? So the option that we discussed in the office, which I am going to a periodontist next week, and we're going to check it all out and get another opinion and talk about other options. But the option that I asked for and that they gave me yesterday for dental implants. And so the process would be, I would surgically extract or remove the caps that are there, put in a bone graft because my bone has decayed away, and if you're gonna screw an implant into it, you need a sturdy state, right? So remove the caps, put in a bone graft, and then I would have to let that heal for months before we could put the implants in. And in that time, he showed me a clear retainer with two teeth spots full of like porcelain. And he said, this would be your temporary solution. A retainer that when I take it out, there's a hole in my mouth. Like that my teeth will literally be in the retainer for months. And here is the part that threw me personally, is that I'm not that girl in 2010 that I don't want to hide in my bedroom. I don't want to hate her anymore. I will always tell you that I am always working on my healing process. I am always working on myself. And this is just another layer and another level. And I know me, and I know that I won't just do this quietly. I won't do this in a way that I'm embarrassed or ashamed, or I can't do it. Anything I do from this point on has to be from a place of love and forgiveness, respect, and grace. So I just kept having this image of me taking my teeth out on social media. You can see it, can't you? Like, if you actually know me, like, that's totally a thing you could see me doing. But I will have to overcome some of my deepest, darkest demons in order to do that. And no matter what option I choose and what happens going forward, I am going to have to love her. I'm going to have to connect with her. And I'm going to have to forgive her for fucking surviving. Which is heavy and it's hard. And one of the reasons that I wanted implants is because I don't want to be back here. I don't want to have to keep being here again where I feel like this. Because that's what trauma feels like. That's what it feels like. It could be something so stupid, and to anybody else, it's uncomfortable and they don't like it, but it's not traumatizing. And that's the difference between the trauma you carry and the experience that they have. And I even shared with the dentist. He's like, so you would have to take it out to sleep. I'm like, okay, so my husband's gonna see me like this. Cool, breathe. And it's not even him seeing me. I know he won't care. Like, this is, it'll be like another party trick. Like, I can make a brain out of the extra skin in my stomach. I like make jokes about the extra skin in my chest. Like, it's, and I don't make these jokes to make fun of myself. It is a comfortable, uncomfortable way of loving the parts and pieces of me that are deemed less desirable by society and my former self. But he said I'd probably have to take it out to eat, and eating in public would be difficult. And we're talking months. I don't do difficult. Like, I do, but I don't do complicated. So the uncomplicated version is to own this. You know, I just was a guest on a grief podcast, Healing Hearts podcast. It's amazing. Episode 3. So beautiful. Listened to it today and almost didn't record this episode because it put me in such a beautiful state regarding my trauma, but I still thought this was a valuable message that I wanted to share. But I was just saying, oh man, what was I just saying? Oh, I remember. It's, you have two options when trauma or grief or something is really heavy for you, something that really, really impacted your life. This applies for grief and any kind of trauma, is you can let it dictate your life. You can hide from it. You can let it, I don't want to say destroy you, but ultimately that's what will happen. Or you can own it. And that is the only reason why I keep getting through the things, is because I own all of it. You know, when I was in active addiction, I didn't own anything, and that led me to drink, that led me to hide, that led me to shame, that led me to hating myself. And I knew I couldn't get sober, I couldn't be sober, and I couldn't stay sober in a world that I hated myself, because ultimately I'd go back to the bottle. I'd go back to drinking if I couldn't love or respect and appreciate everything about me. And so it became, I don't have a life of hiding. I was open and public about my alcoholism. I am open and public about everything. I'm vulnerable and honest to a fault, but I always do it in a way that I show up for myself. I see myself. I own whatever limitation or struggle or problem that I'm facing. I didn't just get an ADHD diagnosis and be like, oh yeah, that was wrong. I went on a deep dive to see myself, to understand myself, to love myself, to appreciate and respect myself instead of feeling like I was the problem my whole life. I had to go fully into that to see me, to love me, because I can't function, I can't move forward from a place of hating myself. And that is what this is for me. The tooth thing is going back to the hardest time in my life and loving her through it. And that's going to be challenging for me. And so, I don't know. I just hope this is helpful for someone that, you know, we're going to get more into this, but our bodies hold on to trauma and it's trying to tell you something. It's trying to communicate with you. And instead of, you know, shoving it away, I think it deserves a seat at the table. I think that, you know, there's a reason there's a reason that this stuff comes back around. There's a reason. And it's not just because caps don't last that long. I'm feeling so many ways. There is a reason for that. So I'm living under the new motto of, if God brings me to it, I'm going to heal my way through it. So that is what I be doing over here. We're going to move on to the next part. So I did, a few months of NET therapy last year in the fall of 2023. And NET stands for Neuro-Emotional Technique. And this is some cool ass shit. I do some cool stuff. Everything that I went through and all the hardships and all the pain and all the drama, it was worth it to be able to do these things, like to be a neurotherapy patient and a neurotherapy graduate and to experience NET and all of that. It's hard though. So NET is, I don't even know how to explain it. So when my therapist said this to me, she's like, yeah, if people don't believe in this, they would maybe call it witchcraft. And I could see that after doing it. So you don't actually, like, I don't want to say you don't talk, but it's not a normal therapy session, okay? So first of all, it's all like body focus. So you have your arm and you hold it out, straight out, and your therapist will just ask your body questions and be like, okay, let's check for like depression, anxiety, like dogmatically positioned. It goes through all of these, like feeling of loss, feeling of failure, like whatever, a million emotions in the books, right? And your arm will stay floating there until something matches. And this is the crazy part, is that there was so much that came up in my NET therapy that I had no mental, like, knowledge of. Like, one time she tested me and it was like, and so if it's accurate, your arm will bob. If your body agrees, your arm will bob. So it would be like, boom, 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 right? And it's crazy, but it is the coolest fucking thing. And so, sorry for those listeners that you are not visual. I'm like doing a little visual representation. Like, when she pushes down on my arm, it just stays there. And then when something is accurate, my arm like bobs up and down, and it's uncontrollable. So we're talking about, we had one session about confrontation. I was horrible with confrontation. Anytime I was in an argument or a conversation, any confrontation, I would end up crying. It didn't matter what emotion I was feeling. It didn't matter what I wanted to portray, what I wanted to say. I would always end up emotional. And I usually don't speak my mind. I usually don't, you know, stand up for myself in those situations. And I just kind of like cower down like a stupid, weak little thing. And it is so frustrating because I am not any of those things. And it's like something that I can't even control. It is something that I've always, always been so annoyed about myself with, right? So we go into this session about confrontation because I wanted to have a talk with somebody in my life that I am normally very cowardly with, that I am not able to speak my mind because I don't want confrontation. I don't want a disagreement. So I just stay silent, right? And I didn't want that. I was going to NET to break through these barriers that I didn't know. And I think that was the thing. I've done neurotherapy. I've done EMDR therapy. I've done so much. I am so aware. I am so mentally aware of so many things. But there's a lot that my body knows that I don't know. And so I could feel that there was still something that was resisting within me, and I couldn't mentally pinpoint it. So I went into NET therapy and I said, you know, there's some kind of block that's holding me from my next level, but I don't know what it is. And she was like, well, I bet your body does. Let's find out. And it did. So anyways, we're doing the confrontation session, and she starts testing for all of these things, and she said, is dogmatically positioned. And my arm bobbed before she even finished the words. And she's like, I knew it. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. And she said, your body does. And I was like, shit, this is crazy. I was dogmatically positioned to feel like the weaker person in a confrontation. If you don't know what dogmatically positioned means, it means this is a belief that is so ingrained into your body and your nervous system that you can't change it. That no matter what you do or what you tell yourself or what you, any of the work that you do, it is ingrained in you like your DNA. They use this term with like religion because it is that hardwired in you like your DNA. And so I had this hardwired belief that I was positioned as the weaker person in a confrontation every single time. And I was like, shit, that's true. I don't know how I got to be this way. I don't know when it started or what happened, but it is so true. So then we went, what is the worst part of that? What is the hardest part of that? What is the hardest part of that? What is the hardest part of that? We test through all these things, and then we end up releasing it at the end of the session. And I had the most amazing conversation. It was not a confrontation at all. It was a conversation. And I was my best self in it, meaning that I was able to be my insightful and positive and vocal self in that conversation, and it never even made it to an argument. It probably would have made it to an argument if I felt like the weaker person, because then I feel like I'm being attacked because I don't say anything. It was such a vicious cycle, but the change was instant and so crazy. So crazy. So anyways, I learned through NET therapy that your body knows way more than you may be able to recall, that you may be able to remember. Panic attacks, anxiety attacks, like these things can be triggered deep down within you for something that you're not even aware of. It could be a smell, it could be a phrase, it could be a place. Your body holds on to this trauma, and it's just gonna keep getting bigger and getting bigger until it gets seen and resolved. You know, the NET therapy is like your body validating some really hard truths, some really, really hard truths. For me, it uncovered a lot of conditional love, a lot of feelings of insecurity, a lot of a lack of support, lack of help, and some really, really, really depressing things from when I was young. But here's the thing, you can't heal from what you don't know is there. And so it is so important to do the work, whatever work that may be for you. And maybe you're I am 10 years into this. So for me to do NET therapy, like that was just my next level. Maybe you don't start there and that's fine. Maybe you're a jump all in kind of person and you want to look it up and go. Great. Whatever it is, just know that there's more to you than you realize. And some of it could be holding you back. And some of it could be hurting you on repeat. So here is something. My best friend is very, very into this, and we're always, you know, talking about this, but physical pain can, chronic pain, long-lasting pain and issues like that, like not an injury, like you bump your arm and you hurt your arm or you fell and you broke your arm, that's different. But for me, I have chronic pain in my back right by my shoulder blade after the accident. And if you look up chronic pain in the neck, chronic pain in the shoulder blade, chronic pain in this center of the back, Chinese medicine, it is attached to a feeling or an emotion. Your body holds trauma, and a lot of it, so even with my neurotherapy, a lot of it is there's a disconnect between the body and the brain, and that's where it creates the pain, because the body is holding on to the trauma and it won't let go. So it's not communicating it with the brain. It is just holding on to it, and isn't creating a source of pain or uncomfort in your body. Like, this shit is cool. This shit is amazing, validating, freeing, and a tad depressing, depending on how you look at it. But again, we can't fix what we don't know. We can't heal from what we have no idea of. So start listening to your body. Start getting in tune with your body. Start taking care of your body. And it may start to talk to you in a way that gives you some guidance and direction on what is keeping you stuck. Next, I want to move on to some cool Chinese medicine stuff. And, you know, any tea follows Chinese medicine. And so there's so much in Chinese medicine relating to your body, your physical body, and your emotions. So this is stuff that you can look up on your own and tap into. Do you wake up during the night? Do you wake up at the same time? Usually, because most people have a wake pattern. They wake up at the same time when they wake up in the middle of the night. For me, it was usually between 12 and 1 a.m. Maybe 12 to 2 a.m., but like 12, 1, 1:30, like every night it was like the same thing. When I'd get up to pee, and that was what it always was for me. I woke up and I would get up and I would go pee, and I would always glance at the time, and it was always the same time. Not exactly, but for the whole night of sleep, it was in within the same hour. And so I'm talking to my friend, and she's like, well, you should, what time is it? And I said, you know, like probably 1 a.m. is the average, right? And she's like, oh, that's your liver. And I'm like, what? Again, I'm like, my liver is waking me up. But while you sleep, your organs go through a cycle of doing a job while you're sleeping. And when you wake up, whatever time you wake up has an association in your body with an organ. And that organ has an association with emotions and feelings. This shit is so cool. So for me, that 12 to 3 a.m. 12 to 3 a.m. is your liver. Your liver is busy detoxifying our bodies and processing the emotions of the day. I am not surprised at all that this is when I was waking up. Hi, before neurotherapy, emotions, yeah, just a few really, really big ones all fucking die. And I'm sure that it took years for my liver to detoxify and get to a healthy state with all the binge drinking that I did as an active alcoholic. So I was not surprised, but some of the four biggest things that can cause this is an unhealthy diet, excess alcohol consumption, which I'm a health and fitness coach. My diet's pretty good. I am now sober, so I don't consume any alcohol. There's also unresolved anger and high levels of stress. And I definitely have those. I don't have a lot of anger, but I have learned that I had some unresolved anger, which I got into in the NET. And when I say unresolved, I mean, wasn't in my brain. It was in my body. My body. We had one session that I had to finish the session literally taking these things and beating like a punching bag, like a workout bag. And I'm beating the sack on the floor because I had to get the anger out. And, you know, I fought it. I didn't want to. I was like, I don't want to be angry. I don't want to place blame. And she said, but there's anger that needs to come out. There is rage that needs to come out. So take it out here in this space. You're not taking it out on someone else, but so you're no longer carrying it. And after that session, My wake-ups became more sporadic and they were not every night at the same time. You can also detox from some of these things. You can do cleanses because it all has to do with different organs in your body too. So you can cleanse that organ. You can look up cleanse for your lungs, cleanse for your liver. I don't recommend that you go just doing any cleanse. Like, please do not. I do have a couple that I have done that I've had very, very great success and results with. If you want to reach out to me, I'd be happy to share. But please don't just go do any cleanse. But look into, how can I detoxify my liver? How can I detox any of these organs that you're struggling with? I know, here's another. So the 12 to 3 a.m. is anger. That's the big emotion. It's anger and it's your liver. From 3 to 5 a.m., that has an association with your lungs, and that is associated with sadness and grief. I'm telling you, this shit is cool. So I recommend that you start paying attention. If you are a person who wakes up every night to pee, what time do you wake up? And then take note of that for a week, for a couple weeks, however long it takes for you to see a consistency, and then look up Chinese medicine, waking up at whatever time you're waking up. Look into it. You are not just sleepwalking through this life. Your body is going to take you somewhere. Your trauma is going to take you somewhere. And if you aren't aware, it might not take you somewhere you want to go. That's it. That's all I have for you today. I hope this was cool. I hope you learned something. Maybe laughed a little bit. And I'm going to finish on this note. So fun fact here, even if you haven't been to the dentist in 5 years and you haven't had your teeth cleaned in 5 years, apparently if you cry to them about the trauma of your teeth, they won't even clean them that day. They'll schedule you for a whole other appointment to come in and cleaning them. But you know what? This was enough for today. Why don't we just process? So if you have anxiety about going to the dentist, you could always just try crying about some drama and see if they let you off the hook. I laugh because it's funny to me today. Yesterday, it was traumatizing and it was horrible. And today, I'm laughing about it. And that is how I get through the shit. I turn whatever mess I have in my life into a message for others, and I take that message myself. Everything that I teach to you, everything that I share, I have taken it to heart first. I have used it or been there or am using it with you. That is my biggest strength, I guess. That I refuse to let anything hold me down for too long, and that I have my own way of turning it into something beautiful and inspirational. At least I hope so. So I hope this was that for you today. I will see you guys next time. Have a good one. Remember to like, subscribe, share, and join our free community on Facebook, #HotMessSuccess, all one word, community.